Say something nice to somebody you disagree with, because you cannot win a fight by starting an argument. Love you all, and I'll see you next time.
From WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, this is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, May 1st. Police and state troopers arrested 9 pro-Palestinian protesters late Monday in Gainesville who had occupied a campus plaza at the University of Florida for days. It followed the arrest of 3 other protesters at the University of South Florida in Tampa hours earlier. They were among the first college arrests in Florida involving national protests on campuses against Israel's military campaign in Gaza. The Gainesville 9 were led away in handcuffs. At least 7 of the 9 are current or former UF students. Yesterday morning, a judge released 8 of the 9. One, a UF philosophy student, is facing a felony battery charge, accusing him of spitting a police officer in the face. The UF administration said the protesters had violated new rules announced last week that included no disruptions and a ban on camping, sleeping, bullhorns, and tents. Last week was the last day of regularly scheduled classes for the semester. Rattlesnake Key is a peninsula in Manatee County jutting into the Gulf of Mexico just south of the Sunshine Skyway. A proposal by the state of Florida to purchase the lush mangrove island and turn it into a state park has fallen through. The land is now up for sale. The state appropriated $23 million to purchase Rattlesnake Key in 2022 to set it aside for conservation. Manatee County had pledged another $2.3 million. But those plans fell apart after a $7.6 million appraisal of the island by the state led to a lowball offer that was quickly rejected by the owners. Rattlesnake Key has been on the state's Florida Forever Program land acquisition list for 26 years. The United States Department of Labor recovered nearly $100,000 in back wages from a Bradenton furniture maker and handed the money to workers. Investigators said they found that Alumatech Furniture Manufacturing, which employs 55 workers at its facility in Bradenton, failed to pay 8 employees overtime. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, May 1st.
You're listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WSLR.org on the internet. And this is the Peace and Justice Report. My name is Bob Connors, and Tom Walker is ready to go.
And good morning, Bob.
Yes, Tom. Another beautiful day. I tell you, the weather has been ideal.
I love it. I love it.
And we have John Dickman on the control board. And the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guest and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, the board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. So with that being said, Tom has a guest lined up, and take it away, Tom.
Hey, with us today is Liz Barker. She's a candidate for the school board of Sarasota County, District 2. She's a mother of 4 with 3 of her children attending public schools. She's an active parent. She's president of the Parent Teacher Association organization at Lakeview Elementary and a member of the school advisory committee. She's also served on the book review committee for math books in the county. Because of her experience as a school psychologist, she has expertise in various educational areas, from cognitive assessments to positive behavior interventions. She transitioned from being a homeschooled student with a fundamentalist Christian education into public school during her sophomore year. And she credits her experience in public education for her success in college and in her career. If elected, she would be the only school board member with children actually in the public school system. So welcome, Liz.
Thank you, Tom. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Yeah. Well, tell us in brief, what your opening state, why are you running?
Well, as you told everyone, first and foremost, I'm a mom and I've got kids in the public schools. And so, seeing firsthand what goes on and what decisions are made and what those look like in our family in real time has been a real eye-opener for me. So last year, really what sent me into deciding to run is my daughter, who was in sixth grade at the time at Pineview, came home and she said, "Mom, I just helped my English teacher pack up our classroom library." And I said, "Ooh. Oh, that does it. I got to throw my hat in the ring. We've got to have some changes." It just, there's no common sense anymore when it comes to these decisions. And I want to see that change. And I think right now we have a lack of perspective from someone who's actually living school firsthand in it. And then, of course, my background is as an educator. So I have this very deep personal investment. And then I also have a background that lends itself to that sort of decision making. So,
well, you say an educator. What job did you have exactly?
Yes, I was a school psychologist. So my experience was with preschool all the way up through age 22 with young people who were in detention centers or alternate environments.
Got it. And where was that?
It was in Fairfax, Virginia, and Prince William, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So, and I know you're a frequent school board attendee. You're running against Karen Rose, and we're going to have her on the show as well.
Good.
First thing I'd like to talk about, I know you're interested in, is teacher salaries. How do we get and retain effective teachers?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you asked that. We just got word yesterday, the National Education Association, the NEA, put out their information on salaries across the country. And Florida actually dropped. We had been the 48th state in the country for teacher salaries. We are now dead last, 50 in Florida for teacher salaries, average teacher salaries. Wow. The interesting thing to me, though, and I've been trying to communicate this to folks, our starting teacher salary is not bad at all. Our starting teacher salary in Florida in general is 16th in the country. So we have clearly an interest in recruiting these young teachers, right? And it seems like a great opportunity for them. The problem, and this is what I hear talking to teachers all the time, is that once they get into the job, it takes them a year or two to get their feet under them. We know that teachers are most effective after about their third year. And that's also the time when teachers begin to feel like they're not being fairly compensated for their level of expertise because the salary is so compressed. So, for example, if you have a 30-year veteran educator who has her master's degree, always receives highly effective ratings, in Sarasota, they're never going to make more than about $70,000. And the cost of living in Sarasota, as you know, is far exceeds that. So it's an interesting dynamic, and one I think we need to focus on is not just how do we recruit these teachers, but how do we keep these teachers? How do we help them to not feel like it's a dead-end job market?
Okay. I totally agree with that. And maybe you can help raise those salaries. You mentioned on your website that you transitioned out of Christian homeschooling as a sophomore in high school. And why did you do that? What happened?
Yeah. So in the culture that I was a part of, that my family was a part of, girls were never meant to attend college. They were not meant to have careers. They certainly were not meant to think critically. And something about that just didn't sit well with me. It didn't sit well with my soul. And so I advocated for myself. And one day they let me get on that bus and I never looked back. So.
I got it. Well, yeah. speaking of homeschooling, there are a lot of public dollars, as you know, going to private schools and homeschooling. Does that worry you? Talk about that a little bit.
It does worry me. So here's the concern is that We have now this universal voucher program in Florida, which means there's no income cap on who can receive vouchers for their children to either be homeschooled or attend a private school.
Right.
And my concern is that is twofold. Number one, of course, it impacts the public school budget. And in some ways, it can lead to a defunding of public education, which is dangerous because public education is the option that, you know, about 80% of Floridian families choose. So we need to ensure that our public schools remain a very competitive option. So number one is the financial aspect there. Number two is we know from research across the country for other states who have enacted similar voucher programs that students who left their high-performing public school using a voucher are typically back in their public school within just 1 or 2 years.
Wow.
And on top of that, and this is the part that really upsets me, they have lost a catastrophic amount of learning. So when they come back, often they need help to get caught up. They sometimes may then qualify for special education services or what we call here ESE services. And to me, that's the real crux of the issue, is that we are allowing children to lose this learning. And the learning loss is really, you know, some of the data that's come back, it's worse than we've seen students who experienced Hurricane Katrina. It's worse than the learning loss during COVID. I mean, we are not talking about an insubstantial amount. And we're talking about now we have very robust data across the country and across time. So, you know, to ignore that very, very compelling information is unsettling to me.
Well, because of these vouchers, do you expect a drop in public school enrollment? I know school CFO Bonnie Penner said they're expecting a decrease in students in the Sarasota County schools.
That's right. That is what the projection is. And of course, you know, there's no crystal ball to see what will actually happen. But that is where we've seen other school districts. So school districts can kind of stay afloat as long as their enrollment stays at least steady, right?
Right.
Even with, you know, some of this vouchers pulling the money, if we keep our enrollment somewhat steady, then school districts have historically been able to stay afloat. Where we run into trouble is when your enrollment drops. And we've seen that in other counties in Florida too, that are now considering closing a large number of schools because their enrollment dropped and they can't afford to keep these schools open. And I would just hate to see that happen in Sarasota. Our schools are really the cornerstone of our community here, and we take great pride in them. So we're going to need to be very purposeful about how we fund our schools, how we compensate our teachers, and how we ensure that our public schools remain the best possible educational environment for children.
Right. And these for-profit schools, some people say there's a lack of oversight in the teacher qualifications or what they teach, whatever. Do you have an opinion about for-profit schools?
I do. You know, and let me just back up to say we're talking about charter schools here, yep. Right? And we're talking about charter schools that are run by a management company that makes a profit.
Yes.
Yes. Perfect. Okay. So yeah, I'm very much a data person. School psychs, that's what we do. We look at data, we analyze data. We're nerds like that. So when you look at the data for charter schools that are run by for-profit management companies, again, the student outcomes are really concerning. Wow. They have lower graduation rates. They have lower achievement rates. So my concern again is twofold, is that what is the impact to our students? And then the impact monetarily is that now we are using some of our tax dollars to in effect pay this private management company. It goes into private pockets. And in many cases, like, you know, the head of Charter Schools USA, he's a millionaire and he donates to many, you know, political candidates. And I find that to be a concerning conflict of interest. I find it to be not a good use of my tax dollars. I think every single one of my tax dollars that's meant to go to education should go to education.
Fine. I agree with you. Okay, talk about the various programs in Sarasota County. For the people who don't go to college, are there good vocational programs to get people ready for a good career if they don't go to college, vocational programs?
So we have actually seen, and I'm sure you know, one of our board members, Tom Edwards, has made a real push for expanding our trades academies at a couple of our high schools. And I was thrilled to see that because, you know, every student is not necessarily interested in attending a four-year college. And they are no less a meaningful part of our community than any other student. And you know, we should have many opportunities for them. And so I would just love to see those trades academies. They've been very popular, very successful. And so I would love to see them continue to expand across our county.
Another thing I talked about a couple, 3 years ago was when we went with a school police force as opposed to the regular police force. And we have 69 officers, I think, now in the schools, a couple of them in high schools, one of them in elementary schools and so forth. Are our kids safe? How are they doing? Are these people well-trained? Are they, how many people are Baker-acted? You know, what are they doing with these young kids? How's it working out? Do you know?
Well, so I have actually had conversations with the chief of the school police, and I was comforted because, listen, first, you know, you heard the data side of me come out strong, right? But first and foremost, I'm a mom. And the most important thing to me is that when I put my three little kids on the bus every morning, that they walk back off that bus to me in the afternoons.
Yes.
Hands down, the most important thing. And we have had, you know, a couple very unsettling incidents at Lakeview this year where I was very concerned specifically for my daughter's safety. And I will say that the SROs, those are the school resource officers, and the safety and security team in Sarasota really, from my perspective, just as a parent, were responsive and did a good job keeping our children safe. And so I will be forever grateful for that.
Good. Glad to hear it. Okay, here's another topic for you. Social and emotional learning, SEL. Explain that. And why is it important? And what's being done about it by the legislature or DeSantis or whoever? Explain that to us.
Well, I truly am baffled at the fact that SEL has sort of become a boogeyman in education, because to me, it seems like the most common sense thing. We want our children to, you know, learn to be honest. We want them to be hard workers. We want them to get along with others. These are skills that are important after graduation. They're just part of raising good humans. Yeah. And we had a curriculum in Sarasota County that was an evidence-based curriculum. And unfortunately, our board, including my opponent, Karen Rose, voted to remove that curriculum with nothing to replace it.
Wow.
So what that looks like in the schools, and here's where I say I think there's a disconnect between what happens at the board level and what happens, you know, how we experience it as families.
Uh-huh.
What that means for us is there's this unsettled period where, you know, my children were really looking forward to being student of the month because that's how, you know, we had done it. And it's like, well, is there no more student of the month? You know, do we no longer have, it was a character strong education, you know, so now what do we do with that block of time during the school day? So now we're teaching typing, you know, which is great too. Typing is also important,
sure.
But I'm just saying that, you know, it's one thing to enact these policies. And my other concern is that these policies are generally very politically motivated. You know, they're you're following a line of conversation. You're following a line of directives. But what does that look like in your school day to day? And what it has meant for our school counselor, and I've had discussions with her about this too, is that now instead of using this evidence-based curriculum, Character Strong, to work through social emotional learning with our students, she's responsible for creating the curriculum. That's not only a big job, but also it's much more difficult to determine effectiveness. It's much more difficult to look at outcomes, and it's not standardized across schools, of course, because you have each school counselor trying to cobble together, you know, what's best for their students.
As opposed to using a curriculum designed elsewhere, or which was
correct
taken out correct. Of the schools?
Correct.
Interesting.
Yes.
So that's, it's kind of a political thing, isn't it?
Very political, yes. And I would love for decisions to be made, you know, like, let's just take the politics out of that. What is best for our students? I don't think that politicians should be dictating what happens in our schools. That's that we are educators, we are parents, we know what's best for our schools, and we should be in charge, not a politician. It just that's what it comes down to.
It reminds me of banning books and teachers being afraid to put books on the shelf.
Don't even get me started, Tom. You don't have enough time for my opinions about that.
Okay. All right. Okay. How is the current superintendent, Terry Connor, doing? I know you were disappointed when we fired Mr. Asplund. How's he doing these days? Terry Connor, the superintendent.
Yes. Well, I advocated very vocally for him to be considered as our superintendent, because when I researched all of the applicants, he was really the only applicant that stood out to me as being qualified. And I think that, you know, again, he has children in our public schools. And so he has a deep personal investment now in continuing our tradition of excellence. And I think he brings some great new ideas. I think he is data driven, which, of course, I appreciate, as mm-hmm. you found out. So I think he's someone that I would love to work with. I think we would make a great team. And I hope that he will have the latitude to, you know, I hope that politics don't enter that equation with him as they did with our previous superintendent.
Okay. All right. Fine. You know, let me give some statistics for the school district. According to what I read on the web, 45,300 students, 3,024 mm-hmm. teachers, 61% of those teachers have a master's degree.
Yeah.
And there are 56 schools of various sorts in the county. That's a lot of people, a lot of business to worry about. Here's another concept. A while back, and I was there at the meetings 2 or 3 years ago, the school board put off considering the community partnership concept, where a school was related to other agencies within the community, and they all worked out, health and social services, they all worked together to form a community.
Community schools.
Yeah. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that? Should not we have it in Sarasota?
Absolutely. Community schools began that concept a couple of years ago, and it's really grown and shown a lot of great results in uh-huh. in many, many cases. So yes, what you're talking about is having members of the community outside of the school and inside of the school sort of come together and decide, what do we need as a community? You know, do we need a food pantry in our school for uh-huh. if students are experiencing hunger? Do we need, some schools have put in place shelters. Some schools have had in-house mental health services available. And really it's about determining where each school is, what that community is most looking for and needing, and having the school become a hub sort of community. And a lot of places that have enacted that model have seen great growth in terms of graduation, in terms of attendance, less behavior issues, better academics. So I would love to see that here in Sarasota. I think it's something that would be a great complement to what we're already doing. What I will say, though, is the barriers to that also need to be considered. And the greatest barrier right now is this political rhetoric that mental health has no place in schools.
Wow.
And that health has no place in schools, and that schools should strictly be about reading, writing, and math. Now, hear me say this. Academics is incredibly important, but in order to boost those academics, you do have to treat the student as a whole student. You have to understand them as a whole student, and they were, you know, and though that will in fact lead to these higher academic outcomes that you want to see. But we have board members, including my opponent, who has said very clearly, and this is a quote, "We have never, ever been in the business of mental health." Well, you know, number one, that's not true. Uh-huh. And number two, it's dangerous. Schools that have strong mental health supports are safer and their students achieve at higher levels. So, you know, I think the community school is a very, very important piece of the puzzle to consider, but we can't do that if we have people who are so focused on following a political rhetoric on our board. It'll never happen.
Would you be in favor of we're talking to Karen, Liz Barker, who is running for the school board. Would you like to see a bilingual program in some of the public schools?
I'd love that. Bilingual education is, you know, absolutely shown to be the most effective way to teach our English language learners. So I think that would be a wonderful addition to what we have right now. We do have a charter school that is doing great work with our bilingual students. And so I would love to see us at the public school do some of that work as well. And they've seen great outcomes there. So, and that's across the board, though. Again, the research indicates that bilingual programs are the most effective way to instruct our ELLs. That said, we need then bilingual teachers. We need bilingual materials. You know, it's a climb, but it should be done.
I volunteered in some math classes where the kids, I guess they were new. They spoke only Spanish. They did not know what was going on. And it's so sad when you see that, because they want to learn.
Yes.
Well, speaking of bilingual, what about the immigrant students? How many do we have? Are they a burden? Are they being helped? Are we serving them well?
You know, here's where I think we have some room for growth. Psychologists, we like to talk about room for growth.
Okay.
we can do a better job serving our English language learners. And historically in Sarasota, this has been a struggle for us. And I was really concerned when I heard one of our board members refer to our non-English speaking students or our students who have immigrated from other countries as potentially being a burden, because I would argue that those students are one of our greatest assets. You know, they bring a level of, you know, experience to our schools, and their families are just a wonderful addition. And so I would love to serve those students in the most effective way possible. But, you know, if our initial thought is that they're a burden, we're not going to be focused on serving them effectively. So let's shift that narrative over to they're an asset, not a burden.
Sure. Sure. A couple more minor things. Ron DeSantis signed Senate Bill 256, which will decertify unions if fewer than 60% of them are paying dues, and if so, they would have to win another representative election. How do you feel about unions? How are they doing and in our county? And does that particular bill hurt us in any way?
Well, it certainly makes things a little bit more, it puts the unions on edge, and it makes their lives a little more difficult. And unions are incredibly important to the teaching profession. That is historically how we have advocated for ourselves and how we have ensured that we continue to receive, well, some pay. It's not enough, that's for sure. We know that across the board. But unions are incredibly important. And in Sarasota, they also made it more difficult last summer. Everyone was taken off of the rolls for where they had been automatically contributing through their paycheck, their union dues. So I know that was a heavy lift, but I'm very grateful to the folks at the Sarasota Teachers Association, because they took that on and they have kept their membership, and they're chugging along. So
it's about half past. We're talking to Liz Barker, candidate for Sarasota School Board District 2. The election is August 20th. Her website is liz4sarasota.com. So final thoughts, Liz. Give us a wrap up.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me here. I just hope that folks in Sarasota will take the time to get to know me and will consider, you know, let's talk about parental rights. Let's put a parent on the school board then, you know?
That's a great slogan. Let's put a parent on the school board.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Novel idea.
Wow. Okay, well, it was a pleasure talking to you, Liz. Thanks for being on our show. I know you've been on Kathy and Tuna's show, and it's maybe a little repetitious, but who knows? Maybe we talked about some different things, and it's always, and I wanted to get to know you. So there you go.
It was wonderful. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for caring about our schools. All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now we've got another candidate. I'm sorry, another guest coming up that Bob met in while he was in New Orleans, and he's getting ready to put her on the air now. Bob, how you doing? Bob's not.
Yes, listening. Can you hear me now, Tom?
They're transitioning to a phone call.
Can you
in
hear
the studio?
Can you hear me now?
Someone Bob met while he was in New Orleans.
Wonder why you can't
mute. Unmute.
And they're working on the connection.
Here it is. I got it, Bob. There, I got it.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah.
You can hear me now. Yes, I hooked up with our guest in New Orleans, so we're just gonna transition to the other studio so we can do the interview by a phone. No, I'm just going to run over there, Tom. You just talk and say Bob will be on in 20 seconds.
How will I know when you're on? I guess I could turn on my little.
Yeah, I'm just going to turn you off and say I just turned Tom off. You didn't enjoy that song, did you? Yeah. You're going to be singing "Peace to the World" because we're going to be talking all about world peace. So
okay,
I know
so
you.
You're going over there and you cut me off.
Just talk for 10 minutes and we'll 10 seconds, and we'll cut you right off. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Okay. Thanks, Tom. That was a great interview. Thank you.
Oh, I thought it was pretty good. We learned a lot. So thank you, Bob.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right. So I'll remind people that are listening to WSLR 96.5 low powers in Sarasota, Florida. We're a nonprofit station. We're heard on podcasts and on the web all over the world. We have fans in China, for that matter. So, and stay tuned at 10 o'clock, of course, for the Democracy Now. Amy Goodman has a terrific show, and I always look forward to that because she covers the world better than anybody I know. And by the way, we appreciate all our donors in the last membership and fund drive that we had. The response was terrific for all the programs, not just ours. Ours was not even the top program. It is an amazing outpouring of appreciation from all the people in Sarasota. We're staffing up. We're doing more local news. It's just people tell me that WSLR is an important asset to the community with their live shows, live movies, live discussions, and all of the stuff we put on the air. So I imagine I'll be off the air pretty soon. Let me see. Just there is an app you can get on your phone that will play WSLR. And
hello, are you there, Audrey?
Okay, we're still waiting for Bob to connect up in the studio on the phone. And I thought this was, I know the lady's on the phone. He's just having trouble hooking up with her. Okay.
Hello, Audrey. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay. We're in Studio A. We're all set now. We're all set. Tom just closed out.
It's very low. I can barely hear you.
Well, let me get our control man in here so that you can hear me more clearly.
Okay.
He'll be here in 1 second. In the meantime, I'm just going to... Say a little bit about how I met you.
Okay.
How I met you in New Orleans the last couple of years. when I had gone down to New Orleans with my good friend John Dickman to the French Quarter Fest. And you have a booth in the French Market, and you do
exactly.
You do tarot card readings there. And you know, I was talking to you last year because the thought came into my mind that with the pandemic, and we were just getting out of the pandemic, you know, you must have talked to a lot of people over that period of time who were quite concerned about their own health, about their friends, about their family. And I said, I had asked you if you'd like to be on our show, and you said yes, but that did not happen during the last year. And then I saw you again 3 weeks ago, since I had gone down again for this year's French Quarter Fest. And
interesting how those things happen, isn't it?
Yes, I said a little more. Can you hear me a little more clearly now?
I can hear you, but it's very faint. It's like we're in a tunnel.
Okay, it's very faint. We're in a tunnel. Well, I'll get to.
But I can hear you.
Okay. No, well, you're going to be doing most of the talking. Let me say, I'm just going to read. I'm just going to read a sentence or two about tarot
okay.
readings and. What it's used for. We use our personal gifts, intuition, clairvoyance, mediumship, to enhance our use of tarot cards. This unique combination is what allows us to connect with ancestors through the cards. It is how we know what it's time to reshuffle in mid-reading. But for centuries, tarot readings have been a popular form of divination and entertainment. Today, in the hands of a gifted psychic, online tarot readings are a tool for answering your most pressing questions about love and relationships, work, money, and more. So whenever you find yourself stuck or needing guidance, tarot is a great way to deepen your connection to spirit and your understanding of past, present, and future events. So I know I had mentioned that to you a few minutes ago, right before we came on the air, and you said yes,
mm-hmm.
you agreed with that.
Right.
So with that being said, give us a sense of, you know, I know you're as old as me. We won't let the audience know how old we actually are, but we're old.
Okay. So, I have no problem with that.
So tell us how long you've been reading tarot cards and how this gift came to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, tarot is a tool. It's in anything that we use, we need our tools, and the cards are a tool. What it is, it opens up. They help us. I call my tarot cards my Rand McNally. It helps me to get to the point with people. And it's 78 pieces of paper. There's nothing mystical about the cards. The cards are a tool to get to the point. I believe that too many people feel that it's mystical, very spooky. And I don't look at it that way. I feel that, you know, it helps us to reach our inner self, and it helps us to, when I do a reading for someone, I'm speaking to their inner self quite often. So I'm trying to think exactly how to put it. It does help us to reach a peacefulness. When people come to me, they are usually and a bit of a turmoil about different things. And some stuff comes out quite often. I keep a box of Kleenex by my table.
Yes.
Because people say, oh, I never cry. I cannot believe that you were able, you know, I have tears. It's because I've been able to open up a peacefulness within themselves and for them to accept something if it was a negative, and to feel the joy when positive things come about.
You know,
with most people, I tell them there is no, a good reader should never leave you saying, but what's going to come? What's going to come? They should be able to show you the ups and downs of the different areas that you go into. When a person leaves the table, I want them to feel like I have been able to help them, not that I need them to come back.
Well, I want to let the listeners know they're listening to the Peace and Justice Report. We have transitioned from the first half of the show talking to a candidate for the school board to a tarot card reader in New Orleans. And right here on your own community radio station, WSLR. And I think I talked to you for a little bit yesterday on the phone. I had mentioned during the last 5 or 6 months we had workshops here or talks every once a month, and they were called the Death Talks. And and Raymond Moody, who was one of the first people to write a book about near-death experiences 50 years ago, has written a new book on proof of life after life, proof of life after life. And one thing I asked you yesterday, and this kind of, you know, went right along with the people's thoughts around when they have a near-death experience, that they go into a tunnel and they see this beautiful light and everything opens up and they feel joy and peace, and they've never felt, had these feelings to this extent before. And I'd like to have you talk a little bit about that, because one of the things you said to me yesterday was how people leave their anger and behind, and their baggage behind.
Yes. And well, that was one of the things that we talked about. I told you that when someone asks about someone who's passed over, when the person comes to me, the most important thing to realize is that when we leave, when we move forward, we pass. I do not like the word death because I don't think we die. Our body is left behind, but we move on. Our inner self moves on. And the only thing that moves on is joy and love. What we leave behind is anger and fear and pain, prejudice, jealousy, hatred, disease. All of the garbage is left on this side. And when we move forward, we move to the other side. And I do believe that when we get on the other side, we actually, so to speak, go to school. And we have to learn the lessons that we should have learned on this side and move forward and find out what we did not take care of. You know, people say that we have free will, and free will is the ability to do whatever you choose. The only thing that's important, though, is that what you choose to do is up to you, but the balance has to come through. It has to balance out. And when we go to the other side, we find out what we have to do to balance out the pain or the problems that we've had on this side. And we have to come back. I do believe we come back time and again in order to achieve that balance. And I do believe that we have to come back. And many times, the opposite of what we didn't like here, the hatreds that we have, the jealousies, we have to come back with the shoe basically on the other foot.
I guess my question would be to you, I mean, you've done so many readings over the years. You've been in the French market for, what, 35 years? Is that what you...
Yes, it'll be 35 years this year.
And you have been, you had been given this gift
for over 50
years. And how did this come to you?
Well, it was a gift. I was born with it. I do believe that everyone has a gift, greater or lesser degree. Everyone has some, if you would, psychic ability. Some people develop it, some people don't. In my family, it ran through my family on both sides of my family, so it did not feel unusual. No one told me, oh, no, you cannot hear people, you know, voices. If you hear voices, you're not told that you're nuts. And I was lucky because I was in a family that was not mystical, but was very much, okay, yes, that happens. And so from the time I was a child, I knew things. When the phone would ring, I knew who was on the phone. When I actually went to a job interview, I was very bad with math. And they had a mathematical part. And as I was filling it out, I heard the answers coming through my head. And I said, thanks, Dad. So, you know, we are born with abilities. And I started with the tarot, actually with my grandmother read the regular cards, playing cards. And then when I was about 25 is when I was introduced to someone who introduced me to the tarot, and she insisted that I should learn. And that's when I started working with tarot and studied for over 5 years before I ever did anyone who was other than a relative or a friend.
So that that was quite a long training you had then.
Yes, it's, you know, I still learn. I am still learning. I feel that with anything that we do, when you stop learning, it's done. And I still see things that come through that with every tarot card, there's at least six or so answers one way, and then when it's upside down, that way. They have different things. And when you combine it with other cards, other things come about. And it's learning how to interpret what is coming through.
So I know so many people, as you said, have a problem. That's why they're coming to you. And,
yes.
You know, I had talked to you a little bit about, of course, this is a Peace and Justice Report. We like to focus on inner peace, world peace. And I know you said to me, well, if we cannot obtain inner peace individually, there's no way we're going to come anywhere close to world peace.
Exactly. If we cannot be joyful within ourselves and feel peaceful and look at balance and justice rather than just revenge. So many people, especially in this day and age, feel like, oh, well, if you do not agree with me, you know, you're my enemy. And all that does is create a negative. Now, when someone comes to me, I don't talk politics, per se, or religion, because this has nothing to do with religion. It's a spiritual gift. And I believe it is a gift just as art or writing or music is a gift. Some people have it to a greater or lesser degree. But with everyone, if you have peace within yourself and don't feel that, if you feel that you can do the best that you can do for you and for yours, that energy goes out. The anger goes out also. I do believe that we have to be aware of allowing other people their opinions without feeling like we have to have it our way. Does that make sense?
Well, yes. No, I mean, that seems to be the major problem that we're confronting as a society right now, is that, you know, You know, I hesitate to talk to people about some of my political beliefs because I know how they're going to react. And, you know, I mean, I would appreciate it if people were more open around accepting other people's views and try to understand where they're coming from and why they hold those views and have a rational conversation rather than immediately jump to the conclusion that, well, we don't have anything in common if you think that, you know.
It's so sad.
Yes, yes. And
it's so sad, and that's why when people come to me, a lot of times I see people who are very conservative, I see people who are very liberal, and a lot of people in the middle. But when they sit at the table, all of that goes out of the window. We're dealing on a one-on-one basis with the person. Quite often they will ask about a loved one who has passed over, and the loved one comes through very, all the time, I would say, they come through. And when they do, they let the person know that, you know, they're on the other side working to fix what they didn't fix here. We do come back.
Yes, well, when you
I
say...
I believe we come back time and again, and I think, as I said, we have to come back. And if we're one way, we will come back another way. I think we have to come back in every religion. I think we have to come back in every color. I think we have to come back in every orientation in order to understand what the full picture is about.
Would it mean that if you're more open and understanding and accepting and more in touch with your own inner being and your spiritual side, that maybe you won't have to come back as often, as much?
I think that I do believe, you know, you hear about saints quite often. I think only Mother Teresa may not have to come back. Because she was the person that came back, and that's only my view, of course, but, you know, this is a person who came, had extreme wealth, and she came in and did everything for others without wanting credit. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I like it when you said it didn't take credit or wasn't looking for accolades or wasn't looking for people. There are some people that you come across who would fall into that category you can really, you know, I have more respect for those people who can say, well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing here. I mean, this is a gift that I was given by God. Uh-huh. And when you mention God, you're talking about the spirit within you.
Well, God is. Yes. You know, God is whatever each person sees what they consider to be God in a different way, and that is everyone's view and everyone's choice. God is.
Yes. So.
And that's how I look at God.
Right.
And, you know, I know this show has to do with peace and justice. And both things. The one thing I wanted to say mainly is when someone goes on the other side, they feel that they're balancing the scales, especially if they have left in a way that was painful, extreme pain, a lot of times with cancers or extreme depression that has taken someone to take their own life or something of that sort. Someone who has been killed or something like that. When they get on the other side, the only thing that comes through is their joy of being on the other side. Not that they wanted to get there that quick, but there's joy, and they feel that the scales are balancing out, that they're able to balance the scales more of their soul or who they are.
So have you've had people come to you that maybe a loved one has taken their own life, and they're so concerned, and they would like to have you, you know, get in touch with them and let them know,
right.
Let them know why that happened, or let them know that they're all right. That has happened.
Yes, and in fact, I had one instance where a young man had been murdered, and the person that came to see me wanted to know if he could say who the murderer was. And what came through was, it happened because this was something that had to happen. It was balancing the scales, that person will do what has to be done to them, not to worry. The person was told, that came to me, they said, don't ruin your life worrying about what happened in my life. It happened and it has passed. Not that there isn't, you know, that people shouldn't look for a murderer, but this had happened, and it was like no one had ever been found, and it was a couple of years, and, you know, the person wanted to know who the murderer was, and the soul on the other side said, let it go, live your life, you are wasting your life worrying about what has already been done.
yes, and I know you... When we talked a little bit yesterday, you said a lot of people are regular customers of yours, and they
right.
And I'm curious about that, because they come and they have a reading, and obviously they're pleased with the fact that what you said, or how they felt when they left, that they felt good, to the point that, well, I'd like to see you again. I'm just curious around that, the people who see you on a regular basis. I mean, I'm trying to think the exact question I have, but go ahead.
Down, sometimes once a year, sometimes I'll see people will come in, and I see people from all the different states, and a lot of times they will come in. I had a lady that came in, and she said, I'm so glad you're here, because you were one of the main reasons I wanted to come in. I had a reading with you. And people will let me know that I was correct. One thing I tell people is that I don't like the expression of blowing smoke?
Yes.
I don't blow smoke. I'm very honest. I'm blunt. And I'm not cruel, but I am blunt, and I will tell you what I see, and if I don't see it, I don't see it. So if I see a negative coming, I let you know so that you can take care of it. I see positive coming, I let you know so that you can embrace it. And in that respect, like if someone comes to me about their career, if I see a real negative, I tell them, get your resume shined up, and it looks like, you know, you hate what you're doing, so get ready to make a change, because there's a lot of negativity here, and make the change before the change makes you.
That's good. That's good. I'm sure so many people confront that issue during the course of their lifetime, and whether it's whether it's a career, or whether they should move from Florida.
Relationship
to
also.
Oh, what's that?
And also with relationship.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. I can imagine. I can imagine that's probably a good percentage of the questions that you.
The major questions people ask are about relationship, financial, career, and health more than anything else.
Right.
And as I tell people, where health is concerned, the only area I don't look at is looking for death coming, because that's God's business, in my opinion, not mine. I ask that I not see that, and that's the one area I don't see. But other than that, I'm very open to whatever area a person wants to go into.
Well, we only have 30 seconds left, Audrey, so the time went by quite quickly here. So,
I hope I was able to give a little bit of insight, Bob, and maybe we can speak again.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. We will be in touch. Yep. If not, I'll see you next year at the French Quarter Fest. So.
Okay, and if anybody ever wants to get in touch with me, they can just let you know.
Yes, definitely. They can let me know and just contact the studio and